You know, yesterday I was asked very serious questions by some scholars about why President Obama was going to meet with the Dalai Lama. I mean, the Dalai Lama drives Chinese officials crazy because he's always going around the world drumming up publicity for Tibet. And I know this caused a lot of unhappiness last year before the Olympics when carrying the torch was interrupted in some places by Tibet supporters, and that got a bad press. And I know local Chinese living in these cities then got angry at the protesters, and we had fights. And I know, it's as you say, the Chinese people believe they've been very generous to the Tibet people, that they've improved their standard of living, and they should not cause problems. This is a psychological problem, and I don't know how it will ever be solved. You know, Tibet has had a long history. For centuries it was so far away. It was, you know, they call it in this a book that was written in 60 years ago, Shangri-La, this sort of special place in the clouds, and it has a romantic sense to it. Now, of course, Tibet's open to tourists, and people can visit there, but they generally go to the main cities. They don't go into the areas. And the monasteries are tourist. People visit the monasteries. Every Chinese government, not just the communist government, has had this feeling that Tibet's part of China. So there was a lot of attention given the situation earlier this year, whether there would be any trouble. And I know the Chinese authorities made efforts to ensure there was no trouble. I think that's a problem analogous to people in other countries, not just China, writing about American race relations. How do blacks and whites get along? You know, it used to be very... Well, you try to report... If you're a reporter in Beijing, for instance, for an American newspaper, and there's a... Well, let's use the current example. You've had this situation with the Uyghurs, with the syringes. That's a fascinating story, because why would they, you know, I saw the story in today's newspaper that would-be terrorists were arrested trying to make bombs. Did you read that in the, I saw it in China Daily today, and it's in the New York Times today also, the story that came out from the Chinese government about they arrested some terrorists in the Uyghur area trying to make bombs, which is very serious. What's their problem? What do they want? Do they want to have their own independent state? Yes. And now many Chinese live there? That's another, you know, these are the kind of stories that if you're a correspondent in Beijing, you have to write about. And that, I think, the Chinese is a bad publicity, because I think the Chinese would rather write about the harmony of the peoples, and, you know, but even the Chinese write about it now, because it's obviously a problem they don't want to hide, but they would just as well, you know, it's a very hard story, because clearly, if people are going around sticking syringes and needles into Chinese people, that's not very good. For Chinese society, it's a real problem of how to resolve this issue in a way that everyone's happy, and I'm not sure it's possible. It's We don't have anything quite analogous. We don't have in the United States a situation somewhat similar to that, because we don't have so many, we don't have parts of the United States that want to be independent of the United States. At least now we don't. And, you know, most parts of the United States always wanted to be part of the United States, like Hawaii, you know, and Alaska. They eventually became states of the United States. The Americans have many people of different nationalities living in the society, but they all like to be seen as Americans. They don't, even though we have people from all countries, China, India, Mexico, they all have come to the United States voluntarily because they want to work there and it's for their children to grow up there. So we've been lucky in that we don't have nationality problems. Other countries, not just China, have nationality problems where people want their own national independence. So to be a correspondent in a country like China or other countries that have a similar problem, like India, you have similar, you know, based on religion, Muslim, Hindu problems all the time. And you have Pakistan, India fighting over this little area of Kashmir, which they haven't been able to solve since the independence of India and Pakistan in 1948. It's important as a correspondent to try to find out what's causing these problems. Why is this never solved?
Excuse me, I have a question.
Yeah.
I think how to solve the problem is a kind of a governmental issue. And what we should concern more about is that how to cover these issues. And we need your suggestions, including domestic media and foreign media.
Well,
we are faced with the similar issues like Tibet or Xinjiang.
Right.
Yeah. What a reporter should do?
Well, again, I don't know how much pressure, if you're a Chinese reporter, how much pressure you're on to give only a good version of events. In other words, I was watching on Chinese television, they have an English language channel, and they had a feature story from the area where the earthquake took place last year Yes, and they were talking about building a new road there to connect the earthquake area to the outside world so they could get supplies in much faster. And then they had a correspondent interviewing all the local people, and everyone was all very positive, thanking government, everything. Nobody was complaining about anything. And I was thinking to myself as a reporter, if you're a reporter, that's not a good thing to do. You need to get some people complaining, because a normal reader or TV viewer knows everyone's not enthusiastic. They've had an earthquake, people have died. I mean, they're not all grateful, they're not all happy. It'd be better to have people who complain as well as people who are happy. And then you could balance the story and the truth comes out in the telling. But when you tell just one side of a story, people laugh and say, bullshit. You know, that's the English term, you know. But that's hard. You know, in a lot of countries, the press is really not independent. And the United States is lucky in that they have built into the law the independence of the press. It's called the freedom of the press. People sometimes joke about it because how free can you be? It's a business. The businesses own the newspapers. They own the websites. But the reality is that to be a journalist in the United States has a lot of responsibility to tell the facts honestly. And in a lot of other countries, there are pressures from people up in the government that the press they view that the press should really work with the government to make people's lives better. I mean, it's looked upon as a cheerleading, that the press should be cheerleaders. Now, I noticed in the English language Chinese press, just as I've been here this week, there have been a lot of interesting stories pointing out some real problems. Stories about pollution, people getting sick with factory having poisonous fumes, people dying. I mean, so it indicates that these stories are getting out now. Is the Chinese press now more energetic, do you think?
Yeah.
Yes. On things like climate control, on the climate pollution. Now, clearly, the air here must drive people crazy because the smog in both Shanghai and Beijing, while I've been here in China, it's been hard. You know, it's much heavier smog than, say, even in New York, which luckily doesn't have much, but the... No, New York really doesn't. It's Los Angeles used to have smog, but that's been cleared up. But the people, are people so used to this? When you wake up in the morning and you look out at the sky, it's not very clear. It's How do you, I mean, that's a story, right? I mean, it's a story about air. I mean, that's, since air is what people breathe and you have to survive on air, I mean, I would think, I mean, during the Olympics last year, of course, the government went to great efforts to reduce the smog because it was getting bad publicity outside of China. And I guess it was lucky that during the Olympics the air was pretty clear. So, anyway, that's a story. This whole climate control is a story. There's a lot of stories that when I was a journalist, I had never even thought of covering. Climate control. Who cared when I was a young man how much carbon dioxide gas was in the air, or whether that would matter? That was a story. I think the basic stories remain the same. So then, all right, so you've now... We went back to that school teacher from Brooklyn and we found out all about her life. Then you want to write a story. You're probably better off talking to two or three people than just one person. But you want to write a story about how the economy is facing American consumers, that is the ordinary middle class person. And you can give different case studies. It would be an interesting story, actually. Some do well, some not so well. I have a younger son who lives in New York City, and he lost his job about a year ago. And he's since then got a part-time job, and he's able to survive. He's having a good time. He's not depressed, but he would like to have a full-time job again. He's a disc jockey among them. You have disc jockeys here? Disc jockeys.
Disc
jockeys. DJs.
DJ.
Yeah. My youngest son is a disc jockey. And so is his wife. They're both disc jockeys. They perform in nightclubs.
They are in radio stations?
No, not radio. No, not disc jockeys on a radio station. Young people come to dance in dance clubs.
Nightclub.
They play something called house music. That's the that's the kind of heavy beat. I don't understand it, but that's what it is. House music is called, and so that's their part-time jobs. They both work and they love it. They love all that music. I don't understand it at all, but anyway.
Mr. Grossman?
Yes.
Do you think that their women report about the foreign affairs or report about China? Do you think that objectivity or balance should be the universally accepted principles for reporting on China?
Should there be some universal principles for reporting?
Yes, maybe. so much bias. And in the US, when the US report too much about China, about the elective side of China, Chinese people will complain to be biased, like Western media. And also the Western media will complain about the Chinese media, well, you just have to have the stories. So if we have some issue, should the world media should share a universal standard for news?
Well, I think I think the basis for reporting hasn't changed. A good reporting should be fair. That is, fair meaning you try to cover all sides of a question. And if you do that, when people read what you write, they'll see you were trying to be fair. It's really bad is when you just take a specific point of view and try to write on that as if you're writing propaganda. You really want to be fair and report the facts. And then after the story has come out the first day or so, we started out talking about this tire issue. Then if you want to do some more research and you have some explanations about some of these problems, you should write an analysis of the problem. And as I was trying to indicate, it's sometimes very hard to understand what's going on in a country, and it's useful to get out as much as possible to talk to people who live there, to see what's on their mind. For instance, right now, if I was a correspondent in New York for a foreign newspaper, not just Chinese, it's a foreign newspaper, I would want to know, I would say the following, I would ask the following questions. Did you vote for Barack Obama as president last year? If they say yes, then you'd say, okay, are you happy now that he's president, or are you a little disappointed, or are you, what is your attitude toward Obama now? He's been president now for about 9 months. I'd be interested to hear the answers. I would like to know whether they'd say, well, on economics, you know, I was hoping things would improve more quickly than they have. Or maybe people will say, well, I'm glad he got that stimulus package approved because that will help the economy, and I would give him a few more months and we'll see how things work out. They might say, spending too much time worrying about health care. I have a good health care and I don't want it changed. He should worry about other things. They might say he needs to work harder to get the health plan approved. He might say he's spending too much time on foreign affairs. He's worried about the Middle East all the time. He goes to Cairo and gives a speech. We have other problems at home. Why is he wasting his time on the Middle East? He should be tougher on Iran. Iran may be a dangerous country. We should be tougher on Iran. On the other hand, people might say, I'm glad he's going to have negotiations with Iran because that's a dangerous country. It's better to talk than to shout. And you might say, on China, I'm glad the economies are better in both countries. And it'll be interesting to see when he goes to China, what kind of reception he gets. He's coming here, in November. Right now...